You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, and so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, it's the double-header Dream Team edition with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. Now, many, many years ago, when David Shapiro first started on the JSE, the old Johannesburg Stock Exchange in the centre of town, Diagonal Street, one of the things he would look forward to was, because there were so many gold mines listed, 30 to 40, I don't know how many it was, but lots of them. He'd probably look forward to reserves updates and trading updates and results coming out, because that shaped the fortune of the market. Viv Govender and myself, on the other hand, probably have grown up looking for pronouncements from the US Federal Reserve, GDP numbers, jobs numbers, inflation numbers very recently have become terribly, terribly important. But one other thing has started to focus market participants' minds, and that is the set of results from a particular company that has a 95% monopoly in the production of artificial intelligence chips. And we know the name of the company. It's called NVIDIA, and its results came out last night, after the market closed. Immediate fall of 7-8%. It's 8% in the share price. Market's recovering today from that, and it was inevitable that it did. But one line really struck me, and that was, having blockbuster numbers is no longer good enough for investors. And I thought, well, what is good enough then? Viv, I'm going to start with you on this one. Numbers, first of all. Good, bad, indifferent, better, worse, what?
In any other company, good. But this is a company that's added over, basically, well over $1 trillion. I think almost $2 trillion in the last few months here, in less than a year. So for a company like that there, you're looking at a situation in which, currently the valuation is what? Is it about $3 trillion? And it was at, it went up 150% over the last, year. So when you have that kind of increase in valuations, even the spectacular numbers that NVIDIA has produced is not enough to make the market, entirely happy. That being said, the share price is only down a couple percent. Still, if you had to look at it for the month today, for the last month, for August alone, it's up 10%, 9.5% or 9.6%. Results are, for any other company, great. But it's all about valuation. And this company is incredibly expensive at the moment with a P/E ratio of about 71. That being said, one more thing to add. Yeah, it's very interesting looking at these things. Demand is still very strong. The situation, they have a problem. The problem is they can't produce enough. There's some issues with supply. And also, interestingly enough, Jensen Huang, the guy that runs NVIDIA, and this is the weird thing. I don't know if I told you guys this before, but Jensen Huang, the guy that runs NVIDIA, and Lisa Su, the woman that runs AMD, which is like the second competitor, are first cousins.
Oh, so it's a family affair, in other words. Yeah. Yes.
First cousins, right? Mm. But Jensen Huang has an incredible life story. I think at one point in time, he was a bus boy cleaning toilets and stuff. It's all in his bio. But he's very, all in on things. He hasn't always been right. He was all in on crypto. Now he's all in AI. So what he's also doing is that apparently NVIDIA is taking equity stakes in some AI startups as well. So it's almost turning itself into an AI ETF. And demand, like I said, is still super strong. The big question, literally the $64 trillion question, and I'm not exaggerating when I say the $1 trillion question, is the fact that, is a question whether or not, will the next round of these LLMs be as much better or have as much improvement as the previous round does? How many more cranks do you have in this, basically, in the scaling up technology? If it is, we could add, these valuations are totally justified. If we see the next round of GPT-5 coming out, or whatever they call it, Orion, Strawberry, whatever they call the new version they're going to bring out, when Grok 3, when Llama 3 comes out, and whatever it may be, are we going to be seeing, the new version being as much better as the old version was, of its predecessor? If that is true, totally justified. If it is not, if we are hitting the top of scaling, if we are picking off, then all these valuations, be it for NVIDIA, be it for Microsoft, a lot of these guys are going to come down very strongly.
David, you said to me on Monday, and this was repeated, because you said it to Wayne McCurry as well, apparently. You said, you can show me these numbers when they come out. This on Monday, Tuesday, whatever it was. When these numbers come out, you can show them to me, and I won't have a clue how the market will interpret them. It could be 10% up, 10% down. And was that the case? Did you have a look at them? Were they too complicated? Were they too convoluted? Yeah. What happened?
No, they weren't at all. And they were superb results. As Viv said at the opening, any other company, I mean, if you look at them in absolute terms, I mean, it's an incredible number. And particularly whence this company has come from, you know, over the last couple of years. And the product's good. And as he said, Jensen Wong said, you know, we're going to be selling lots and lots of these Blackwell chips later on. Blackwell, I think, it's you know, I don't understand how they made up, but I do believe that it's a better chip in the sense that you use less electricity and you can use in the same hardware and process more data and so on. My point, you know, when I look at it, at the moment, it's running two laps ahead of its competitors. They might catch up. They, you know, Nvidia might tire. But I think it's become an obsession in the market.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's an absolute obsession. It's almost Trump versus Harris. You've got two sides that are going in each other. The bears get angry, you know, because they want the share to come down. There's massive short positions there. On the other hand, there are those that like it and, you know, are buying it and believe in it. So we're in the middle, you know, and I think today's performance, I've been watching it, and everything is up today. The markets are incredibly strong. We've got a good GDP number out of the United States. Everything's pointing towards the U.S. economy doing well. And the one stock that's down is Nvidia. Why? Because of this absolute emotion, you know, around it. The bears don't want to capitulate yet. They're going to say, you know, we're going to show you. We're going to show you. We're going to go even further, you know, more shorts and so on. And so we're getting this fight and you just watch on the sidelines and say, okay, you know, whatever. But I think this year, the other thing, Lindsay, I listened to quite a few analysts as well.
Yes.
And the majority are long, saying buy and weakness, you know, with a target price 140, 150, even higher. And we're not talking about small houses. You know, it's not some isolated analyst or Hindenburg there who's trying to make a name for themselves. But you know, some of the big houses, you know. So I'm saying the analysts that we talked to as well from UBS, in Singapore is bullish and continues to remain. And I listened to UBS this morning as well. The same thing. So I said, okay, I'm going along with this. You know, I'm happy with what I see. And, but, you know, Viv is right. I think there will be a time where we say, okay, we've had enough. You know, it's time to go look somewhere else.
Yeah, there's the spoil sports, the bears in the market. I presume they're talking their book. There was one chap that said, I'm not sure that this momentum can continue. I'm not sure that they can maintain this monopoly. And 95% is technically a monopoly. And I'm not sure that the share price valuation can be justified. So obviously saying we think it's going to come down. But there must be a graveyard somewhere with people that have shorted NVIDIA over the years.
One comment, Viv, just that you'll appreciate, and I won't mention anybody's name because I like the man. But I received last night because I'd made a comment talking on the radio because Jensen Wong had sold some shares. I said, you know, he's also entitled to buy a hamburger and chips, meaning, listen, you know, sometimes you are out of cash in a bit to do something. You want to buy a new motor car or something. You know, it depends. But I got a podcast or a speech that went on for 30 minutes, you know, doing the same as the Hindenburg research, you know, trying to find conspiracy theories about, you know, that's what we're up against. Okay, you know, so that's people out there got incredible emotions about something. So it's a company, man. You know, you don't like it, sell it. You don't have to get, you know, we don't have to get emotive. We don't have to get involved physically, mentally, and everything. It's just another listed business.
Yeah, and you let the people enjoy its success. Stop trying to pick holes in it. Stop trying to be clever and top and calling the top of the market. It's just nonsense. Go with the momentum, and when it turns, you might miss the first few percent, but then you can start to look at offloading a little bit. I don't understand it. People are so impatient and so petty. Viv, you're neither impatient nor petty. If you're a big money manager, asset manager, and you're mainly involved in US equities, this presents a problem for you, not just Nvidia, but also the other mega tech stocks and also some of the pharma companies that produce weight loss drugs. You have to be in them, even though the valuations are quite stretched. You have to be in them, because if you're not in them, your peers are in them, and when they go up, you're going to start to fall back in the performance table. But on the other hand, if you are in them and they fall, and they can fall because they're so stretched, then you're leaving your investors, your clients, vulnerable. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I just wonder, it was like the NASPERS process days of the JSE when they were collectively, I think, something like 25%. It's a conundrum, Viv.
Look, I mean, not to like talk my own book, but I do run, one of the portfolios I run is an AI portfolio. And NVIDIA is my biggest position. It wasn't the biggest when I started off. I just haven't sold it since I bought it. And it's turned out to be my biggest position by, you know, a little bit here. And it's you know, done over 100% in the last year for me. Because of course, it's done that well. But I do think we have to be aware of certain things. I mean, you know, we always say, like, you know, look at history. I mean, most people look at history, look back to, like, you know, the year 1947, 1950, right about there, because that's after World War II. That's where they look back at history. There was 70-year history. But looking back at longer term, we do have these, you know, these gigantic, you know, technological revolutions. What I would expect out there is, like, sailing. Sailing turned a little country off the coast of Europe, England, into the world superpower. Okay, if you look at all of history, you would have never have thought it's possible for a tiny little nation, you know, like it was, to be this dominant over the world, you know, bigger than the Roman Empire. And it was all about technology. If this technology is real, the valuations and the expectations we have of what a company can be worth is just out the window. It could be something like, you know, turning it, you know, a 10-plus trillion-dollar valuation on NVIDIA is not out of the limits if this thing is real. Because what happens is then you get into a basically money-for-IQ kind of situation. If you have more money, you can buy more chips. The more chips will give you higher IQ. The higher IQ earns you more money from your AI. That's what it is. And that becomes a feedback loop. And the guy that basically provides the chips is the one that's guaranteed to make money all the way through. And I think that's what is happening right now. That's the belief system they have in the tech market right now. And NVIDIA is not like some of these like cryptocurrencies or whatever that went up in massive valuation, but there's nothing basic. They do a $50 billion buyback, $50 billion buyback, share buyback. They are printing money hand over fist. Okay. At the moment, this is a very profitable business. The only question is whether that this profitability justifies a $3 trillion valuation. So that is the only question around NVIDIA. As a business, it's doing incredibly well. As a enterprise, it's doing incredibly well.
Sorry to interrupt.
One last thing. This is not going to take 5 years to find out whether this is real or not. It's going to happen within the next, I would say, 6 months to 9 months. Yeah. By the first quarter of next year, you will know what GPT-5 looks like. You will know what the next level of Grok. I think the Llama 4, Grok 3, GPT-5, Claude 4, whatever it's going to be. These things will be out by this first quarter of next year. The problem we have here, as the guy from the head chief technology officer of Microsoft said this, we are an exponential curve, right? The exponential curve is AI. The problem is that we are limited by hardware, so we only take a reading of this exponential curve every couple of years, because that's where the hardware shifts up to the next level. And we're about to get the next point of that curve. We kind of know what a good point looks like, we know what a bad point looks like, and we're going to see, like I said, within basically the next 6 months, what the next point looks like. And we'll know for certain, overwiped or not. It's not going to be a question.
Okay. David, you wanted to say something.
I just think, you know, listening to Viv, yeah, he's right. I mean, this is nothing new, but the beauty is that I don't know how much money Viv has got and how much he controls, but I promise you, for what I – and I'm okay. I've got a nice business. I press one button, we're out. You know, that's it. Yeah. I don't have to labor over it. Let's get out. Done. that's relative to where we are. And that's why I like to – you know, I don't think we have to make decisions yet on the PEs or anything. And when Viv's right, you know, when it comes back, we might give it back, or you said it, I think, Alan.
Yes.
Give back a few points, and we're gone. Okay. We're up so much. I promise you, Viv bought these at 10 cents. I mean, $10 at the moment, relative, because it's split a couple of times, 120. He's got a margin there that's as big as the Indian Ocean. So yeah. We can just add.
Not quite that good, but a big margin, right? You're correct.
Very good. Okay, so we're sticking with, we're not panicking, we're not being naysayers, we're not being predictors of doom and gloom. We just stay with the thing. It's a brilliant company. There hasn't been a company like it in the last few years. I can't even think of a comparison. I can think of the, you know, the Microsoft and the Apples of this world. Yeah, brilliant. But this thing has captured the imagination like no company I've ever seen in my career. Now then, David, let's come back down to earth and talk about the JSE. Today, Blue Label Impala, I can't remember whether it was Sanlam or Santam had a trading update, but one had either trading updates or numbers. But anyway, I don't really want to talk about them too much. I want to talk about one that you know quite well because it's split. The original company founded by your mate Brian Joffe has split, and we've got Bidvest in South Africa, Bidcorp, the international operation, food distribution, etc. What a set of numbers. I mean, they said in the opening, and you think, oh, goodness me, these numbers are not going to be good. It said, because of this, and the economic that, and this, the other. In other words, really quite gloomy stuff. And then they say, we increased our revenue by 15.1%. Incredible numbers for a company like that.
There's a story there. And, you know, I mean, I know Brian very well. And from my old Greenside days and everything, and I grew with the company. And when I say I grew, I was an outsider looking in. Yeah. There's a story I'll tell you about it. But what we learned from this operation, from both Bidvest and Bidcorp, was management. I was talking to Wayne last night, the DNA of management, you know, good practices all the way. And that's exactly how they've run this operation. Bernard is a superb manager as well. This is not a complicated. What they do is they get food and they deliver it to a restaurant. You know, I mean, how difficult is that? They get cheese and they put little sugar things, you know, they get those made, those things that you tear open and put into your coffee. It's not a complicated business. It's just a very, very well-run business. So you're not going to get AI-type returns out of this, but you're going to get solid, good numbers on a persistent basis.
And a dividend, which I think was up 16%, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's a nice dividend. It gives you a very good return. The other point is, even if you look at Bidvest, the DNA exists in that business. They don't do anything stupid. The last stupid thing that Joffe did was he bought Adcock Ingram 10 years ago at 75, still hasn't made his money back. But, I mean, you know, that's the last silly thing they did. But they'll get out of it and they'll work their way from it. And I just say that tongue in cheek, but I think that's the point that I really want to bring across. It's, you know, well, breweries was like that in the same way. You know what I mean? SAB, they just got solid, good manager and they train up these people and they've got the same culture that goes right through the business. So I think if you wanted to explain it, that's the best way to explain it.
Yeah. Good. And the other thing is about these numbers before we move on to market prices is that the growth was organic. They didn't go out buying companies in Germany or the Netherlands or whatever. It was purely internal growth. And again, that comes down to management, David.
Totally. Absolutely. You know, it's they don't do something. If it doesn't fit, they leave it alone. If it's not the right price, leave it alone. And even Bidvest, which is now expanding offshore, if you see the businesses, they kind of bolt-on businesses. You know, they're not going into anything new. It fits into their existing operations, whether it's cleaning toilets in a building or whatever. You know, the Steiner type health situation. They're good operations, and I wish people could learn from it. You know, I wish other businesses could learn. And you also have to understand management as well. You know, Joffe was there to build a legacy. He wasn't there to fill his bank with options or to fill his back pocket with options. He did well. I mean, I'm not complaining of him, but it was, you know, he wanted to build a legacy. And I think that legacy continues.
Okay. Well summarized, David. Thank you for that. Now I shall summarize the markets. Where the dollar rand is nice and steady ahead of what is essentially a long weekend in the United States of America. Incidentally, this week has been relatively quiet outside of Nvidia because We've been sandwiched between two public holidays, one in London on Monday and one in the United States the coming Monday, this weekend, where everybody gets in cars and gets on aeroplanes. And this is a signal of the end of the US holiday season. Labor Day on Monday, everyone back to, starts drifting back to work from the Hamptons and the Bahamas. That's my theory anyway. Okay, dollar rand, 1777, British pound against the rand, 2338. Euro rand, 1968. Euro dollar, 110.75. That was 112 a couple of days ago. So the euro losing ground against the dollar.
You know why?
Why is that? Because of GDP?
They're talking about rate cuts, They're talking about rate cuts, I think, shortly in the euro. So I think that's why it's weakened slightly.
Okay, thank you for that. British pound against the dollar, 131.60. Gold price, that's doing all right. It's up $20, 225.22. Platinum for once, and palladium for once going up. $13 up for platinum to 947, and palladium 970, up $36. The oil price now, it suddenly jumped again. We had that bit of a flurry because of the eastern Libyan oil fields being shut down temporarily, and I thought, well, that was just a flash in the pan, and they're sitting around the table and resolving their differences. Two governments, of course, in Libya. Brent crude oil, $80.22, up bang on 2%, and West Texas crude, $76.43, up just over 2.5%. And what else have we got? Copper had a bad day yesterday, and it's having another one today, 1.9% weaker, at just below $4.14 per pound. Nothing else really to speak of there. S&P 500 futures really looked terrible after the NVIDIA results yesterday. I think they went down to something like, I think they went down to 55.20 or something. They're now back up 56.53, which is up 0.75%. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield, 3.89%, and the South African 10-year yield, 9.32%, also jumping a bit. And as for Bitcoin, well, it's back above 60s, just below 61,000, up around about 3%. Viv, apart from all your AI stuff, do you have a domestic portfolio as well on behalf of clients?
You have to, because you do Regulation 28 business, you have to have something local. That being said, you know, when we do get out of the Regulation 28 space, when you have living annuities and so on, we tend to go much more offshore.
Yeah, of course. And why wouldn't you? Historically, that would serve you well. David, on the movers on the JSE, I'll come up with mine in a moment, but maybe you start. What have you seen? Any themes today?
Not really. I think it's been very, very quiet. You know, just before, I wanted to see a comparison, because just as before we came on air.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't believe this, unless I haven't updated. For me, it looks like the value traded was around about 10 billion, but I'm not sure, because that's what I saw before the closing auction. So I'm not sure if this is updated, but very, very low levels of activity. And, what has dominated in a big way, Lindsay, has been the financials.
Yes.
I know Bitcoin, I see, is up again today. It had a very good run yesterday, up another 3% in that. But if I had to identify anything, it's an incredible run in banks and financials, supported by some of the miners as well.
Well, the miners yesterday were horrible, 2.5% down for the resources index, and the bottom five was populated by the diggers. But today, the Bitcoin story. The Bitcoin story is an interesting one, because when I see a stock rally 4.5% like it did yesterday on its results, you think, that's maybe a few shorts in the market, it's just a flash in the pan. But there's been buying. People have gone through those numbers, to my mind, and they've said, okay, let's load up on this dividend, great story, organic growth. It's just doing well overseas, unlike some South African companies over the decades. But anyway, Bidcorp up 3.75% today. Sanlam 3.2% higher. Pan African Resources up 3. Anglo Gold up 2.75%. I think it went ex-div yesterday, so back up today. Sun International up 2.7%. Downside, Sirius down 3%. Impala Platinum, another 2.5% weaker. Investec PLC has lost 2.5%. Quilter down nearly 2%. The volume yesterday, David, was 21 billion. So maybe people just said, right, we've got to square our books up ahead of the long weekend. And that is why today's volumes are so low, because everyone's given up. I don't know.
I've got a new one.
Exactly.
It has updated. Nothing great, 15 billion. So quite a bit came through right at the end. But it was, I think that's just the order of the day. That's what we see every day. So when you look at volumes, there's a lot of squaring towards the end of the day as you get the balancing. But volume's incredibly low. And that's why you see these wide movements. Lindsay, the other point, on Bitcoin, when you actually look into the JSE, and you want to build a portfolio, because remember, pension funds, you're still getting all those contributions that come in on a monthly basis.
Yes.
So difficult to put together a portfolio. It really is. And I think one of the obstacles is the volatility that we're seeing in the mining industry. It hasn't bottomed yet. It's still trying to find a bottom. So if you look through South32's numbers today, you look through Impala's, you still got a very, there are a lot of difficulties there. They're talking good, but it's you go through BHP numbers as well. So our market is kind of being tossed aside by that. One day up, one day down in resources. But just to put a portfolio together is so difficult.
Just briefly staying with you, David, closing indices, if you would.
Yeah. So the All Share Index ended plus up about 0.25%, 84.239. Resource Index came back from being all over the place, up 0.5% as well, even though some of the big miners were in negative territory. Anglo's, Glencore, African Rainbow Minerals, Amplats, Impala, all negative, but still managed to creep in the 0.5%. And I think the gold shares kept the precious metals and mining index up. There were gains in Anglo Gold, Goldfields, Harmony, and so on. Banks up, 0.4%, nothing dramatic there. And industrials hardly better. Consumer discretionary down, and I think the reason for that is that if you look at AB InBev, Richemont, Process, British American, Placo, Naspers, all down, all in negative territory as well. So all the big ones, offshore based, were down. So mixed, that's what we're getting. It's all over the place. You mentioned some of the gainers, but they don't really have a lot of sway in the overall index.
Viv, earlier on, just to end this, Viv, you mentioned Britain, a tiny little island, and advances in sailing, etc., and off they went, and they dominated. And at one stage, in those days, the British Empire was represented by pink on a map or a globe, and 40% of the world was administered or owned in a way, if people can own countries, owned by Britain. It's not a particularly a glorious moment in British history, because there was a good deal of brutality meted out to other countries. But the fact is that Britain has always been fairly innovative, until along came Tony Blair, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak, and now the awful Sir Keir Starmer, dragging us backwards and never to recover. I mean, unless someone extraordinary comes along. But you mentioned sailing. Now, I don't know if you follow this sort of thing, but occasionally you'll see a snippet on the news. The America's Cup started in 1851. It's the oldest international sporting event in history. It started then, and it's been going on since. I don't know if you've seen the technology of the New Yachts. I used to watch it just out of interest. And you see the crew on the deck of this catamaran, and they're pulling ropes, and sails are going one way, and they have to do a sort of a U-turn round a buoy in the middle of a choppy ocean. And it was great. But now you can't see any crew. They've got these almost like hydrofoils on the side, which are programmed with AI to get round this buoy. So it's all now. I mean, okay, you have to have a skipper, and you have to make a few decisions, but it's all computer generated, Viv. It's everywhere, your AI.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's another thing you have to understand, that if everything stopped today, absolutely stopped today, there was no more progress for where we are right now. In the next 10 years, the developments in the world, just based on the current technology, would still be revolutionary. We'd still be seeing such incredible changes in how the world works, just based on the stuff that we have available right now. The stuff is coming out in ways that are weird. But what do you want to mention? I don't think we mentioned this yet. I don't know if you talked about it. Have you talked about the two-pot system yet?
No, we haven't.
On Sunday.
Is that when it starts?
It starts on Sunday. And I wanted to ask David, because I've been seeing estimates out there somewhere around about the 70 billion rand range in terms of withdrawals.
Yeah. Anywhere between 25 to 70. No one knows what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one knows. Yeah.
Yeah. And 70 billion in a market that does about 15 billion in a day in terms of sales.
Yeah.
In terms of cross sale. That's going to be a very, I think that's going to be front loaded as well. It's going to happen mostly in the first month. I don't know if you expect or not, but I think next month might be very bad for the South African markets. Really? If you're forcing to see 50, 70 billion rounds of sale through a market that does 15 billion in one day in total volume.
Oh, that's a cheerful thought.
We're trying to understand what it does to, because it's going to affect those pension funds where they have a low level of worker, you know, or low income workers, you know,
with
smaller pension funds who need the money rather than an older established type pension funds. But no one can give me any kind of clear indication of what it's going to do to the stock market. I sit on a pension fund and they're very well kind of buffered or cushioned, made a little bit of a provision, but it's hardly going to dent them at all. This is a multi-billion one. And so I think for the larger ones are okay, but I think it's going to be released into the economy, mainly for foodstuffs or whatever. My big fear, and I say this tongue in cheek, mainly because I read there was an article, I don't know if you picked it up, from Capitec about the huge levels of sports betting. And it's just something that really upsets me.
It does.
Genuinely upsets me because every time I'm a sports lover, I watch the sports all the time, and the only thing I see are sports betting adverts from different, and they're glamorous. They make it glamorous with a bit of booze on the side, cognacs and so on, and everything's glamorous, and it's not that glamorous.
There's nothing glamorous about losing a bet, David, let me tell you, and then trying to claw it back and being in the pocket of your bookmaker. Yeah. I used to bet informally, and I would invariably lose. You can't win, really, unless you're very, very lucky or very skillful or have insider knowledge on what's going on. But I remember the chap said to me, I phoned him up and I said, look, I can't pay for another few days till I get paid. He said, no worry. But he said, Lindsay, pay and the pain goes away. And also know your limits. But these companies like Paddy Power in the UK, they come across as really friendly. They have lovely ads and it's very funny. They don't use the glamour thing. They use the humour thing. But you look at the football that you and I watch religiously, David, about 50% of the Premiership clubs have a sports betting company on their shirts. I hate it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's a reason you put the casinos way out of the distance, middle of Las Vegas, Sun City. Yes, it's fun to go and gamble for a weekend or so, right? But you can't have it available every day, all the time. That's when you get into real trouble.
Yeah.
You can go and say, okay, I'll blow your a certain amount of money back in the day at Wild Coast or something, you know what I mean? Or go to Las Vegas or go to Sun City and you have this a long trip, you do it, it's over, you come back. But when you start having casinos in the city, once you start having the thing on your phone.
Yes, exactly.
This is very dangerous. I mean, it's a very dangerous thing.
You can play slots on your phone every night. You can play poker on your phone every night. It's not a day out or a weekend out with the family and having $100,000 flutter on the slots or something. This is an addiction on that phone. And I'm sure half the people you watch are sitting in a restaurant with their phone. I'm sure some of them are playing the slots.
There was an advert. That's what I was going to say. There was one advert where both of them, the male and the female, the lady excuses herself, goes to sit on the toilet so that she can finish her bet. And the chap, her date, is doing the exact same thing. And that's what it is down to. It becomes an obsession. And believe me, there's nothing glamorous. And it's all over the place. It's in your face. And Capitec raised concerns. And there's nothing. There's no... kids can pick up their parents' phone and do what they like because you don't have to be 18 or whatever it is. But anyway, it's...
it's a good point you brought up, David. I mean, I should maybe do an extended program about the extent of sports betting in South Africa, which can ill afford it, let's face it. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time, as always. Okay. Another great chat. I really enjoyed it today. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both from Johannesburg, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.